was that time when the Springboks and the All Blacks meet for a winner makes history Rugby World Cup final in France. At stake for the winners is the chance to be the first team to 4 World Cup titles. And if the Boks do it, they also would become only the second team to win back-to-back titles after the very same All Blacks, of course. But before all of that, it's time for the Inside Pass, News 24's daily and dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. I'm Simnigo Tlabanisa, and I'm joined by my colleague in France, senior sports writer Kanyiso Chwaku. I have to tell you that today we kind of catch him on the hop a little, in that he's actually at the Springboks training. So we probably do one of the worst things a journalist can ask in a press conference is, what's the mood like in the camp? I suspect that's exactly what I'm going to ask him because, well, we're sitting here, we have no idea what's going on, and there's a lot of talk about us possibly losing one of our players, and therefore, maybe, just maybe, for once, this question actually applies. Chucks, how you doing?
Good morning, Simon. Good morning to the listeners. I'm not going to be like the quote and say the mood, or does the Pulema who said the mood is the mood of a meeting. the mood in the camp is the mood of the camp. There's no such here. To actually answer your question, look, the Boks came out of their past playing. I think it was a very joyous reggae tune. They didn't come down the stairs normally, they went through the back. But when they came out, they were happy, they were smiling. It happens to be their last training session of the year. I mean, JJ, as I speak to you now, Lucanio, I'm just appearing out of the changing room, running across the field. We're speaking to JJ Frederick, the logistics manager, and when he was taking out the tackle backs, and he says, yes, I'm doing this for the last time this year. And when I asked him about are you going to need the tackle bags again for captain's run? Like, no, so we don't need this for captain's run. Captain's run is just us going through the particular motions. So the mood, even when Kanan, Kurtley, Jaden walked out, they're like, yeah, there's no elastic gear. So yes, this is it for the Boks from a training perspective. For Jacques Nob in particular, as Springbok coach, this is the last training session, proper training session he's ever seeing. He's one of the first people to come out of the tunnel when the team arrived to get ready for this training session. As I tell you now, that the players are doing different drills, for example, the forwards with Gobus Reinach and Fafti Klek, they're already starting their passing drill. So, yeah, they are very expectant. They are very anticipatory of what will transpire over the coming 2 days. And really, they've got the day off tomorrow anyway.
Speaking of what will transpire over the next 2 days, obviously the dark cloud hanging over the team is the racism allegations that have been leveled against hooker Bongimbo Nambi by English flanker Tom Curry. What is the latest on that? And as far as you can see, how has that affected sort of the mood in the team in terms of, you know, them obviously, you know, preparing for this massive game on Saturday?
I think they've been very, very firm in how they've been talking in press conferences. But what's very clear is that it hasn't actually quite affected Bongi Bonham. As I'm talking to you now, is actually doing his hooker, he's throwing routines now, and they're actually joking around and actually very happy about that. I mean, Seacolus is also part of this particular routine. So when you actually look at it from a distance, players would be probably upset about it. But I think moments like these are the ones that you actually internalize. And he used as something very particular as a driving point in the game and his invention in the past. If there's one thing the Boks have done very well, if they've been put in a corner where they felt like they've been the accused or the wall's up against them and their backs are against the wall, I think that's how they are able to just channel their emotions better than any other team. So I think, look, they will most probably use whatever's being said about Bongi at the moment. I mean, I'm not to accuse a particular media houses of having an agenda, but when you look at how this particular matter is being covered in the UK as compared to us, James Cole from Sky Sports, so I'm short of saying that we as South African journalists are taking sides in a short bulletin. He actually said that the South African media has been obliging in how they've been covering this particular matter. So already there's a lot of side taking in how this particular matter is being looked at. I mean, Hendrik Grenier this morning wrote a report saying that the particular words that Bongi Mwanambi used in last year's Twickenham test and not in this particular matter have actually put through a request for comment to Dominic Rumbles to find out, is that actually the truth? And so far, an hour later, there's no response as yet. So, look, it's... I won't call it a pitched battle right now between World Rugby and ISRA Rugby, but it's coming across as it is, because even World Rugby, when the question was put to them yesterday by one English journalist and Valen Kirtley, they did not be at the liberty to explain where the investigation was at this point in time. So it's added to uncertainty. Yes, I'm not condoning the fact that those words were said. If they were said, no player should be called that. I'm on the field. There's no place for something like that on the field. However, though, if now an incident from last year is used to frame a player in a match that took place this weekend, I think there's a lot of questions that may need to be asked of the Rugby Football Union and Tom Curran in particular.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. We need to backtrack. If, I can only treat it as a claim, I guess. If there's a new claim that says that these words were actually used last November, which is literally almost a year ago, how do they then reheated sort of leftovers suddenly surface less than a week ago? I'm now completely confused. So how did what is the sequence of events that led to a situation where this was said, not reported, but then it somehow came up this time around? I mean, what's your understanding? I mean, I know that we all have more questions than answers at the moment, but just talk me through how that's even plausible.
That's actually the question that I actually put to Dominic. If this was said last year, how is it admissible in the case that needs to take place this year? This is not a criminal case where you say that Tikala Lmoli when someone's been murdered. clearly, you can't take something. You can't take something that was said last year and apply it in the context of a match this year. Clearly, I think Angus Gardner officiated that game. There has been an officiating lapse from World Rugby and Six Nations last year to actually take Bongi to talk in the event he actually uttered those words. And that test was actually makes World Rugby look even more bad, because they didn't take action over this particular matter last year. Why are they only taking action on a matter that took place last year? So already it speaks badly to how this particular matter is being handled by World Rugby. So, I mean, even World Rugby aren't actually coming and saying that in England have either laid the complaint or either the complaint, or the complaint actually comes, they just said that they've lodged a formal review. Yes, but they haven't come out and said that, no, England have not lodged a complaint. Because if then England have lodged the complaint, then it's a different story. But if England haven't lodged the complaint, and then they are the ones who are pushing pushing the matter, and then trying to use evidence that is used from last year, then it becomes a bit of a different story then.
I don't know. My problem with this whole thing is, to quote the guy from Sky, it has kind of become one of those stories where sort of like, It's quite dominated by narrative as opposed to the truth. And obviously, I don't think any of us can get to the truth right now, simply because it's all shrouded behind a process. So that's fair enough. That's fine. But like, my thing is, off the many sort of tidbits of information that have come true, what can we trust? You know, first there was, there was obviously the footage of Curry asking the ref, if I'm called this, what should I, what should I do? That's the first one. And then came a video, I think, was it yesterday, that kind of like suggested that Bongi was just dealing with a call. How do you know, like, how do any of us know that this is, this is the video at that right time? And then obviously now you get this, which is, oh no, this was said last year. Like, what actually can we hang our hats on in terms of what's going on with this case? And hopefully that's other than the fact that World Rugby haven't made a decision.
What becomes interesting is that Daily Mail actually had a story, said exclusive story, saying that that bit of information, that particular clip, isn't the smoking gun to the case. There is a separate incident before that where Mwangi is alleged to have called Tom Curry the two words. So now, and then it goes back to question, what's true and what's not true? What to believe and what can't he believe? Because clearly now, that particular passage of play is no longer a smoking gun, because we are able to hear clearly what is said in that particular passage of play. So now what becomes very interesting is that passage of play, that's now out. So then Daily Mail says there's another particular passage that points out these particular words. So now it leads to the question, which bit of evidence is are we going to use in this hearing? Are they going to use verbal testimony? Is there going to be time for verbal testimony, especially for the Springboks? Because the last thing they want to worry about is having to testify when they're for the final. So it's a question that I don't want to lie. I can put up as many theories. I do not know how to answer that question, because there are so many versions of evidence coming out. And clearly, one bit of evidence needs to suit a particular narrative. And then another bit of evidence needs to suit a particular narrative. And none of the aggrieved party, be it World Rugby, Rugby Football Union, be it SA Rugby, be it World Rugby, are actually coming out and saying that, one, this is what happened. With the Springboks saying, yes, this happened, no, we denied. England Rugby are sticking to the story saying, this happened. I think what also makes things difficult is that SA Rugby is silent, because they are not either confirming or neither denying. Whereas if they actually confirmed or denied, then it would put the proper catch among the pigeons, and that would leave the onus on World Rugby to prove that these words were said.
All right. I mean, this is exactly the thing about this whole topic. It's that it's dominated the build-up to the greatest sort of rugby game between New Zealand and South Africa since obviously 1995, the last time they met in a World Cup final, game won by South Africa. I'll take the tact of running with the ref first. Wayne Barnes has history with both these teams. The New Zealand one is the one we all know from, I think, the Michalak pass in 2007 in the quarterfinal, which cost New Zealand, a chance to go into the semis. We all know how that ended up, with us winning in the end. But obviously, the past with South Africa is much more recent in that, obviously, with Rassie Erasmus taking to Twitter late last year in November after the Boks lost 30-26 to France in a game refereed by Wayne Barnes. Rassie doing that whole sort of I'm sort of criticizing you, but I'm not really criticizing you thing on Twitter, and got banned for it from match day activities for two matches for as director of rugby. So the theme of the Springboks throughout this tournament has been that they've earned the respect of the refs back. In less than a year, do you feel like they've earned Wayne Barnes's? Because in Barnes's situation, it was a personal thing. It ended up with death threats and even threats to his wife. So that's a much more sort of personal thing, as opposed to, say, a Ben O'Keefe, who was never one of the referees involved in the Springboks sort of losing the respect of the refs, in inverted commas, if you will. So do you feel like, a year is basically a long time in and has basically ended up with the Boks being forgiven by Wayne Barnes?
Well, it has to, because I think, remember that Ben O'Keefe himself was an inadvertent victim of the Springboks at the British and Irish Lions series in 2021, where after Nick Berry's rather atrocious performance in that first test, then came the video, and then Ben O'Keefe now had to be the man in the middle to actually demand the second test, came through that particular game with flying colours. And then from there, I think he would have earned the Boks' respect. He would have actually then also given the Boks the respect they deserve. If you listen closely to the game on Saturday, Ben O'Keefe was enemy number one every time he made a decision that went towards the French. towards a box. I mean, he got the bigger, he got bigger boos than a box did. So I think with Wayne Barnes, it would be the same. And that the box has not protested decisions on the field, except when every so often Vili will try something that's unnecessary. The box, if there's a decision that's been made against them, they've accepted it with grace, they've retreated 10 meters. I mean, if you look back at what Owen Farrell did, Owen Farrell effectively costing in that test, where the box had a penalty, he then tripped Ben O'Keefe, England, on March 10 meters.
Yeah,
and what would have been a line-out kick, a line-out attempt that ended up being a three-pointer that made a big difference towards in the outcome of the game at the moment. So yeah. I think what the Bucks have done, they've left the dealing of the ref to the captain and the powers that be. Because even Sia, when the decision that's made, Sia will not protest the decision, but in the second half, he'll come back clearly briefed by the coaches that A, B, C, and D went wrong. Please speak to the referee and just make him aware of this happened, that happened, and just let him know that these things are to be looked after. So I think that way, I'm not being Johnny Sexton-ish or Owen Farrell-ish with the referee, has come and actually served the Springboks very well.
All right, moving on to the one thing I suspect everyone is interested in. The team gets announced tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And obviously the one thing that all of us could see on Saturday was that the Bucks were still feeling the after effects of a grueling quarterfinal against France. And so they started lethargically and they desperately needed that bomb squad to come and save them. Now, question is, can these guys get themselves up for, you know, another epic game, third weekend in a row? Or do they need freshening up? And if they do need freshening up, who are we talking here?
I mean, in a chat we had, a short chat about Andy, because this has been his week. I mean, in a lot of rugby circles, a lot of people have been pointing fingers at Andy Edwards, the Box fitness coach, and saying that this is his week. Look, I mean, this week effectively motivates itself. It's probably the week where players you're not going to get any extra fitness this week. It's just about managing yourself, managing with the team being managed as well as it is. And I think also because it's probably the last game for some players, it's the last game of the year, it's the World Cup final, I think players are allowed to empty the tank. And I mean, you did raise in the previous conversation that you were concerned about the outpouring of emotion after the France game. I think when you look at the outpouring of emotion in the England game, it was very different. The players were like, sheesh, we've got over this game, now on to the next one. I think that was telling. Whereas in the France game, you could see they were very happy. There was a big concern that even it was asked in the press conference, Ange Dujoux was asked, isn't he concerned with the fact that the players are too relieved that they've got past France? And in the subsequent press conferences, Marax in particular, was it pains to stress that they weren't too concerned about the outwelling of emotion. But unfortunately, it then panned out in the game that the Box took forever to actually get into the game. I mean, if the Box played the All Blacks, in that semi-final, I think we'd be talking about a rather different result. Even though it's the All Blacks, the Box did look spent until the bomb squad came in. But I think what became key is that the bench was taken. A lot of the starters who looked lethargic in that game were taken off early. So outside of the sweep, they had another 30 minutes to actually rest. And one would think that because now the Box also didn't move hotels, covering did not include traveling, because remember the Box had to move from the quarterfinal to the semifinal. They moved from the southwest of Paris to the north of Paris. Yes, they've got an escort, but again, they have to up and pack. They've got families. So that entire travel, they mentioned that they were happier to move from Royal de Mamas on to their hotel, but it's not a very big move for them. But as the Box had to up sticks across the city, they are much happier being here. Here in Domwon, they just another 5Ks up in this thing in Prelay. So may come to their advantage now that they don't have to move around for what is a showpiece game.
All right. Just in terms of the individual changes that may take place, usually the Springboks like to play the All Blacks with a 6-2 split. We'll leave the 7-1 split from the last time the two teams met. Usually they like to go 6-2 split. And the conventional wisdom is that you can't play 6-2 split and have both Meinie and Andre Pollard in the same team. How do you see them going in that number 10 debate that just refuses to go away?
I mean, you mentioned in one of the columns that the Bucks have been surprising and being unsurprising. The 5-3s worked against two very physical packs. Or New Zealand may not always have in France's physicality and England's listing and England's determination is they have in getting and moving the game very quickly. What the Bucks need to guard against and disregard the selection is denying the All Blacks quick board, because in the quarterfinals of the All Blacks they dominated the breakdown, they had quick board. So now what becomes very important now what will guide South Africa's election is how do they slow down the All Blacks board, because if New Zealand get away, as we saw in Mount Smart, last time we saw in Ellis Park last year, the All Blacks were now unstoppable. So I wouldn't necessarily see a shift, but I think also remember now, South Africa's election will also be guided by the Sibonginbonambi matchup, because now, if he's now in very common suspended or found guilty of his particular infraction, that will necessitate a slight change, because that means Dion Fury and then Marco van Staden then have to be factored in into the team, and then may have an impact on selection. So again, that particular albatross that still hasn't been resolved by SA by World Rugby is going to have a massive impact.
All right, that sounds like that's all he had time for in terms of his data, maybe in his phone. That's it from us today. Maybe that was a quiet note for the bosses to just top him up a little bit. Tomorrow should be exciting, actually, simply because not only do you get the team, what's happened with the team, you also possibly could get what's happened with this whole Bonginbonambi matter. But thank you so much for joining us today. Please be sure to tune in at 11 a.m. tomorrow. This is the Inside Pass.